The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Russian gas is once again flowing in Europe, but Europeans are bracing for instability.
This potential calamity will remain hanging over their heads throughout the cold period because it does appear that Putin wants to keep them in a state of permanent alert.
And uncertainty in Italy after the prime minister resigns. Plus, is gold still a safe haven? It's Thursday, July 21st. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Natural gas is once again flowing at a reduced volume through the critical Nord Stream pipeline connecting Russia with Germany, according to the line's operator. It comes after a tense 10 days, rife with speculation that Russia would cut off the gas flow due to Western sanctions against Moscow. European governments are still expecting supply instability and working to reduce their reliance on Russian energy exports. We'll talk more about Nord Stream and the expected challenges ahead in just a few minutes. There's renewed political uncertainty in Italy following the resignation of Prime Minister Mario Draghi. His resignation follows a Senate confidence vote where key parties in his National Unity Coalition did not back him. The upheaval comes as Italy is facing surging inflation and an economic downturn. Draghi will stay on as caretaker prime minister until a new government is formed or early elections are held. The House committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol is holding its eighth hearing tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Wall Street Journal reporter Scott Patterson says it will focus on what was happening inside the White House during a crucial period of 187 minutes after former President Donald Trump delivered a speech to supporters.
What the committee has said that they intend to show is the lack of action by President Trump on January 6th. It's what he didn't do that they really want to highlight. He didn't call his Secretary of Defense. He didn't call the National Guard. He didn't call any police officials who would have been able to expedite sending aid to the Capitol Police at the Capitol that day. And I think that their goal is to raise the question about why not.
Additional hearings are planned for later this year. U.S. automaker Ford is planning to cut more than 4,000 white-collar jobs. That's according to people familiar with the matter who say the cuts are tied to the company's plan to eliminate $3 billion in annual costs by 2026 and set it up for a transition to electric vehicles. They say the cuts would mostly come from Ford's North American ranks and are not expected to include factory workers. And the Bank of Japan said Thursday that inflation would likely rise above the bank's 2% target this fiscal year. But it kept ultra-low interest rates unchanged to support the nation's economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. Our markets reporter Caitlin McCabe explains what the decision means for the yen.
The yen has really been stuck between an incredibly strong U.S. dollar and Japan's easy monetary policy. And this is a problem for the yen because we've seen currencies of countries that have been more aggressive on raising interest rates generally have stronger currencies this year. And a weak yen isn't good for the Japanese economy, and it has global implications. The yen is one of the most traded currencies in the world, and so people are continuing to watch its moves and the moves of the Bank of Japan very closely.
Gold, typically a haven for investors in times of trouble, has fallen more than 9% over five consecutive weeks. It's the largest decline since December of 2016. Joining me now with more on this is Wall Street Journal markets reporter Hartika Singh. Hi, Hartika. Thanks for being here.
Of course. Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
So, Hartika, tell us what's dragging the price of gold down right now.
So, gold is actually a very interesting asset. Most investors consider gold to be an inflation hedge, which means that during these times where we have fresh multi-year highs on the inflation print, gold should be going up. However, it isn't exactly behaving that way. And that's because investors are betting that the Federal Reserve will be raising rates very, very aggressively to tame this inflation. That has pushed up yields on government bonds. That has strengthened the US dollar. And both of those right now are overpowering whatever's going on with the inflation. So investors are focusing their attention there, and that's dragging down gold. So higher rates basically increase the competition for gold from government bonds. So if you're getting an ultra-safe asset, holding it and getting a 3% yield compared to gold, why wouldn't you want to hold that? Because you don't really get a regular payment for holding gold. And then also gold, which is priced in dollar, it becomes more expensive for overseas buyers with a stronger dollar.
So does this mean that gold is no longer considered a haven? And if so, where else might investors park their money?
That's a good question. So it's sort of hard to describe because usually in the short term, gold doesn't necessarily act like an inflation hedge. And most of the gold extreme bulls would agree with that. However, over the long term, and by long term, I mean over decades, data does point to the fact that gold does act as an inflation hedge. Even during this market rout, even with these declines, gold has held relatively stable if you compare it to other assets. So the S&P 500 has fallen much more, much faster than gold, whereas gold hasn't declined all that much. So I guess the argument could be made that gold is still somewhat of a stable asset where you could park your money and you wouldn't necessarily expect to wake up the next morning and find it all gone.
That's Wall Street Journal markets reporter Hardika Singh. Hardika, thank you so much.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. Appreciate it. Bye.
Coming up, Russia has resumed its flow of natural gas to Europe. Why some governments are still concerned about reliance on the energy supply. That's after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
As we reported earlier, Russia has resumed sending gas to Europe through the Nord Stream pipeline that connects Russia with Germany under the Baltic Sea. The operation resumed after its annual maintenance. During that time, Europe had worried Russia might cut off the supply completely. Joining me now to discuss this is Wall Street Journal Germany correspondent Boyan Penchevsky. Hi, Boyan. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Anna-Marie. Good to be here.
So, Boyan, there had been fears that this flow would be stopped. It now appears to be flowing again. Where does that leave us right now?
Well, essentially, we're back to square one where we were before this maintenance work started 10 days ago. Nord Stream 2 is the key pipeline that carries Russian gas into Europe, and its volume has been slashed by 60% in June. So essentially, Europe is getting less Russian gas than usual and less than it needs, really. But flows appear now to be coming back to the normal from 10 days ago. So that kind of takes away the anxiety that Russian gas will be cut off entirely, which would have been an economic disaster and would have pushed Germany and other countries into a pretty severe recession, according to economists. But they're not out of the woods yet. There are tensions remaining. People fear that Russia may yet cut off gas or reduce the volumes further. And the level of gas they're sending at the moment is not actually enough to fill the storage and to feel safe through the cold season.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Russian President Vladimir Putin had said there could be other curbs. So what are the main fears you're hearing from European leaders right now?
Well, essentially, Vladimir Putin said that the problem was a turbine that's necessary for the operation of the pipeline that had been held up by sanctions in Canada, where it was kind of being repaired or maintained. Now, German officials, experts, and even one Gazprom manager in Europe told me that this is actually not true. And in fact, Gazprom and Nord Stream have a very, very elaborate system of maintenance whereby there are reserve turbines at all times available if something happens. Western officials and experts are saying that that's just an excuse. And so the fact that Putin mentioned it means that he's still willing to kind of menace the Europeans with the specter of cutting off gas. That practically means that this tension will remain throughout the year. That means that German policymakers and the industry will not actually have any stability or certainty about their energy supply, and that they are basically having to brace themselves for a cutoff or a further reduction, which means that they need to always have in the back of their mind a contingency plan, what to do if energy runs low or becomes cut off entirely. And that effectively means they'll need to make great savings. They'll need to prepare plans for action in the worst case scenario. In terms of the government, that means they will need to subsidize industry. They will probably need to subsidize the consumers and so on.
Bojan, what would it mean if the supply were cut off? Give us a sense of how critical this supply is to the continent.
It's extremely critical. The supply of gas to Europe is very important for a number of reasons, and it's especially very important to some countries, including Germany, which is the continent's biggest economy and industrial powerhouse. So a sudden cutoff of gas would have an extreme ripple effect through the economies of Europe, because when Germany sneezes, everyone catches a cold. The supply chains are extremely integrated. German companies have tentacles spreading across the continent, and the effects will be huge. So it's a pretty dire scenario. Policymakers here and elsewhere are extremely concerned about this. And it seems that this potential calamity will remain hanging over their heads throughout the cold period, because it does appear that Putin wants to keep them in a state of permanent alert, as one policymaker told me yesterday night. Essentially, they believe that part of the reason why Putin is doing this is to jack up the energy prices on the market, because you have to remember, even though Russia sells at lower volumes, paradoxically, it makes more money than it was making before the sanctions, because the prices on the market for both oil and gas are now extremely high. And obviously, they're kept at that high level with every volatility injected into the market. And every time the Russian president kind of warns that he might shut down gas deliveries, the market gets jittery and prices go up.
That's Wall Street Journal Germany correspondent Bojan Penchevsky. Bojan, thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure as always.
And finally, international travel can be messy these days. Among the challenges, how to use your cell phone as you would normally without getting hit with hefty international fees. Our personal tech columnist Nicole Nguyen suggests buying a local prepaid SIM card, which you can often grab at the airport. The card pops into your phone and gives you a local number and data.
This is often the cheapest way to get the most data, and you also get a local number, so you can call establishments included in this rate. Unfortunately, it means when you land in the airport, you have to find a carrier kiosk, or you have to go into town to a local carrier and sign up for a SIM and often hand over your passport and all of these things. But if you have a newer phone that has eSIM capability, in some countries, you can actually buy that eSIM ahead of time so that when you land, you have the local SIM already fired up on your phone. It's a little bit technically complicated, that it involves going into settings and scanning a QR code and finding an eSIM dealer on the internet. But once you have it set up, it's super convenient and it's much cheaper than your home carrier's rate.
And that's what's news for this Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.